Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. I am on my own today. Dr. Ahn is not able to be with us, so I'm going to be interviewing our guest solo. I hope you have a wonderful show listening in. Our guest today is Jake Ward. Jake is a 31-year-old transsexual man. He lives in Chicago. He was born and raised in the Midwest. He started exploring his gender identity at the age of 13 and then started his medical transition at 16. Multiple healthcare providers evaluated him for multiple years before he was able to proceed with the medical transition. He has completed top surgery and bottom surgery. Additionally, he was raised in a non-denominational Christian family and is still very connected to his faith. His objective has always been to be acknowledged as a man by society and live his life as normally as possible. For Jake, being trans is a medical condition that he deals with the best way he can. Wonderful. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to just give my two cents, and hopefully folks out there benefit from it and enjoy it.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things we pride ourselves with here at the Umbrella Hour is that we want to look at the lives of LGBT people from various or diverse vantage points. And so we want people who have had very different experiences and have very different opinions about things to share all about those experiences and their opinions, because I think that's what truly shows how wonderfully diverse we are as a community.
Sure, absolutely. That sounds great.
I learned about Jake by watching another podcaster who was interviewing him. That's Buck Angel, for all of you who know about him. We interviewed Buck last year, so definitely go take a listen to that interview. And Jake was on Buck's channel, and I really enjoyed the conversation. And I got in touch with Buck and said, hey, can you introduce me to Jake? I'd love to have him come on the Umbrella Hour. And he was amenable to that. And Jake, thankfully, was open to coming on the show. And one of the things, I don't recall exactly, Jake, how much you went into the topic of faith and religion in your talk with Buck, but it is in your bio. And I'm fascinated by that. You know, a lot of people don't know. I was raised Catholic. I'm no longer a Catholic. I am Protestant, but I have a master's in theology. So I'm fascinated by religion and spirituality and theology. And so I love to talk to people about those topics. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about what your faith journey has been. And are you still connected in with maybe the faith tradition that you were raised in? And if not, what are you doing now? And have you found a place? Are you a member of a church or a temple or something like that? Let's just talk in all different directions about it.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So growing up being part of a church community, that was something I was always raised with. It was either grandma took me to church or mom or dad took me to church. And then you grow up participating in like Sunday school classes, things like that, vacation Bible school. If you could write a description of what does the typical church kid do, that would be me. And then getting into like the middle school and high school, it's like you went to Wednesday night youth group. There was never a denomination attached to any of the churches that we were a part of. It was always more of a kind of an independent, you know, non-denominational type of environment. So it was just kind of each church was a little bit different in how they approach things. I've been to churches where it was you sat in a wooden pew and you sung hymns. I've been to churches where they've got a full band and it's you may get confused and thinking you stepped into a rock concert by mistake because it's a more contemporary type of setting. That's basically what I kind of grew up in. And it was interesting as I was growing up and getting into more into middle school and high school, and it started to shift of, okay, I'm doing these things because my family says this is what we believe and this is what we do. That's when it really started to shift. It's like, no, I actually do uphold to these beliefs. I do believe in God. I do have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I do consider him the Messiah, Lord and Savior, you know, died on the cross for the sins of the world, that whole kind of thing. That's always an interesting conversation when I tell people that's like, but you're trans and you're a Christian. How does that make sense? And I'm like, because my faith is based on what I believe in, not based on what other people who claim to believe the same things believes in.
I remember back in the 1980s hearing somebody say being Christian and being gay is an oxymoron. I remember turning to them and say, well, I guess you've never been to the Metropolitan Community Church then. Because the Metropolitan Community Church is a church still to this day. It's a Protestant denomination that was founded by Reverend Troy Perry, a gay man who was a Baptist minister who was defrocked, so to speak, right? Like kicked out of the Baptist church for being a gay man. And he started his own church. I mean, I don't know that he initially, just like most people, didn't intend to start an entire denomination. I'm sure Jesus wanted people to stay Jewish. You know, the Methodists, I would imagine that they were, the idea of creating an entire new denomination wasn't in the mind of the person at the time, but nonetheless, that's what happened. You know, Martin Luther wanted to reform the Catholic Church, not create Lutherans.
Right.
And so the idea of either homosexuality or gayness and transsexuality and Christian faith being incompatible has always boggled my mind. Because would anybody say you can't be trans and Jewish or trans and Muslim? I mean, well, a lot of Muslim people with Islam doesn't accept transsexuality, but most people wouldn't say that in general. Hindu, Buddhist, and trans. But for some reason, there is a more negative slant towards Christianity. And yeah, I just find that really interesting, because there's not only the Metropolitan Community Church, but there's so many Protestant denominations in particular that are have open and affirming congregations and gay and lesbian clergy, trans clergy.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's still kind of this stigma that Christianity and being trans are two things that can't go together. Well, it's like, well, I'd say you need to find a better church that actually understands what Jesus stood for. If you go to a church that doesn't support the LGBT community, I mean, that's my personal standpoint. Last I checked, the two big things Jesus told us to do was love God and love people. And having hatred towards someone because you don't agree with or understand the way they live their lives, that's not really being very loving. So
I think I said, my wife Margaret was telling me some story the other day about this woman who called herself a Christian, but the way she was behaving, I was like, well, that's not very Christian-like how she's behaving. Is your family still involved in non-denominational churches?
Yeah, I mean, they've had to kind of church shop a little bit. That was actually something my dad and my stepmom did just recently, because they gotten to the point where the church they were attending, I don't know if it was necessarily the church themselves, but a lot of leadership within the church had kind of taken a position of they were not beyond the side of accepting of LGBT folk, because with a family that has a trans son and a bisexual son, that's not going to work out too well. They had to look elsewhere, and I think they did just recently test drove a new church that has a very different viewpoint. They're like, no, we accept everyone. We love everyone. We accept everyone. All are welcome. And they're very happy there. And I found a faith community here in Chicago that is very much the same philosophy. It's interesting because they have their boundary where they will not perform a same-sex wedding, which I'm not sure why they decided that was the boundary. But in general, they're very accepting. And basically, their official opinion is we don't have an opinion. And I think from their standpoint, if they were willing to marry a same-sex couple, that means then that they have an opinion. And so they feel like the best way is like, we love everyone. We accept everyone. All are welcome. All people are allowed to serve within the church and hold positions of leadership within the church. But we need to make sure that we present that we're not taking an official side on one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I could live with that. If you think about it, a marriage is a binding contract between you and another person with the government, right? It's a document you get from the government and you sign it and the minister signs it after some sort of ceremony, but the wedding itself is just a ceremony. So you can get married without a wedding, and you can have a wedding without being married, right? They really are two separate things. So I guess I don't see a problem with that when a church says we're not going to perform same-sex weddings, because it's legal now in all 50 states for same-sex couples to get married. So they don't need that space in order to do it. I wonder if they'd let it happen in that space, but another person did it, not the minister of the church.
That is an interesting thought. Like if someone that was a part of the church, like, hey, I really want to get married, you know, in my church, my home church, I understand the pastoral staff is not comfortable officiating the ceremony, but if I brought my own officiate, could I do that? That's an interesting thought. I'm not sure what they would do with that, honestly. And I guess, to me, I see a distinction between there are affirming faith communities and there are accepting communities. Affirming communities, I think of as you're going to see them marching in a pride parade as a community that fully supports the LGBT community. And they're very public and very out and proud of their support of LGBT folk. Whereas my church in particular, they're more accepting. They're not going to be marching in a pride parade, but they're not going to shy away from the fact that they do welcome everyone. I guess that's kind of the distinction.
Yeah, I'd be perfectly fine with that. I remember back in the day when people were demonstrating and trying to pass laws to have same-sex marriage. And there was some talk at the time, this was back in the 90s, there was some talk back then about calling what we did a civil union, right? So we'd get the paperwork from the government and then we would have a civil union. They would just create a parallel to marriage. And I think the reason people didn't like that was because it was the idea of separate but equal. Like they didn't really,
right.
They didn't like that because the idea of forcing a religious institution to perform a ceremony we call wedding, I can see how that can be a problem for some. And again, it's unnecessary. Some people want the ceremony, but there's so many places now that we can go and have that ceremony if we want it. It doesn't have to be in that specific church environment. So I like that. It's like they're open, they're accepting, they're friendly. People can be in all levels of involvement in the church, but they're not going to march in a pride parade. That wouldn't be a deal breaker for me either.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I have zero issues with that. The fact that, yes, they do have some kind of a boundary that says, hey, you know, we will be involved and support the LGBT community, but we have a boundary. I think it's a very respectful, still very loving and welcoming boundary. They've showed me nothing but love and compassion. It's one of those things. There's only maybe a handful of people in the church that know about me being a trans person, but the few people that do know, they've been very welcoming. They allow me to participate in men's groups and as far as for like small groups and things. And I've come across gay people and lesbian couple that comes to the church all the time. They participate in the band, they participate in all kinds of different things, which was very different than some of the churches I had growing up. The church that my dad and my stepmom just left, actually, as soon as someone within leadership found out I was trans, I was no longer allowed to play in the band. I was not allowed to be involved in any kind of a men's group. I could participate in co-ed groups, but I couldn't be in a men's group. It was a very different kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. When I was living in San Diego, I was a member, not a member, but I went to a church for maybe about 2 years. They were liberal evangelicals. And I think a lot of people think when they hear the word evangelical, they think of proselytizing and anti-gay. And no, that's probably more conservative evangelicals. There's also liberal evangelicals. And so I was attending this church and it was the same thing. There were gay and lesbian people. I think I was the only trans person there, but they did have gay and lesbian people at all levels of involvement, even on the board. Mm-hmm. And some of them were given opportunities to lead different activities. And there was a men's group. And I attended that group for about a year. And I found a lot of value in it. It was one of the first times that I had been part of an all men's group where I had disclosed right from the beginning that I was trans, whereas there were others where I disclosed maybe later on, because I was worried that they might not accept me or I was concerned about how they might treat me. But by the time that I was going to this group, I was many years into transition. And so I thought, no, I'm just going to be who I am. I'm going to tell people right from the beginning. And they were nothing but warm and welcoming. And I had a great time. I learned a lot about not judging people. Right? We have a lot of prejudgments. I don't know if you've dealt with that yourself, of having a prejudgment about somebody because they belong to a particular group or they might have said something that sounds like something that these type of people say, right? And so we judge them without really knowing them. And I thought, well, if I don't want people to judge me without knowing me, I should probably stop judging them without knowing them. And so it was a wonderful experience of really getting to know all of the different men in that group. And everybody had their own celebrations and challenges that they talked about. It was weekly that we met. And so I got to really learn about the lives, right? The true lives of these men. And I thought it was a true honor and a gift to be able to be welcomed into that group. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. I'm definitely experiencing that now. I've been with the men's group I'm in now for probably about a year now, which about the same time that I've been going to this particular church, and very welcoming. I took a good couple weeks or so just to feel it out. It's like, do I want to share? Do I not? And what was a kind of a nice segue, there was another guy in the group, he brought up that he has a trans sister. And I'm like, okay, how are people responding to this? And, you know, let's see. And it seemed like everyone was very compassionate, very loving. I didn't get any indication that anyone was uncomfortable him talking about having a trans sister. And I'm like, okay. So then when we were going around just kind of doing our group check-in kind of thing, I shared that I was getting ready to have surgery. And it's like, oh, well, what kind of surgery you have? And then that's when it's like, oh, well, I'm actually a trans guy. And this is my last surgery for my transition. And they're like, oh, we're really glad that you feel comfortable sharing this with us. In this particular group, our mantra is strength and vulnerability. It's, we appreciate that you're vulnerable and that you're willing to share this with us because, you know, it helps us all grow closer as a group. And we're really glad that you shared this with us.
That must have been a nice thing to hear.
It was very different because the last time I had tried out being really active with a church, I stayed totally under the radar, stealth, did not tell anybody about it. And so I always kind of felt very guarded because it's like, are these people okay with me because they don't know? Or, you know, it's like kind of feeling like I'm only accepted because no one knows. And it was always that fear. Whereas now in this new community, I don't have that issue. It's like, oh, it's like, no, it's like I can be comfortable. I can share it if I feel the need to share it. And there's no issues. It's really nice because I feel like I'm not having to live two lives, so to speak, where it's like, okay, I've got my life in church and life outside of church. Everything can just be all together and there's no conflict one over the other. It's like I can honor being a trans person and I can honor being a Christian.
You know, one of the things that I like about what you're saying, I mean, I like it all, but one of the things that I want to comment on is you were in a place and you felt like you couldn't be your whole self in that environment, right? This other church. And it turns out that they didn't want you there either, right? Once they knew who you were. And so you made a choice to leave, right? And so I think that within our community, we have people who will stay in an environment like that and try and force people to change. And then some people are going to say, well, to hell with religion or to hell with Christianity and just abandon the whole thing and become atheist or start going to Buddhist meditation groups, right? They'll be so hurt, feel such betrayal that they'll just abandon the church. And then other people do what you did is they say, okay, I need to move and I need to find a welcoming place. I always want to advise people, not advise them really, just that there's multiple ways that we can respond to when people don't want us around. Well, if you don't want me around, then I'll get going because I don't want to force you to like me. And I definitely don't want to be around a bunch of people who don't like me. So I'm just going to go. For me, I didn't abandon my faith. But I think some people, well, that might be a little harsh to say. I didn't choose to no longer be Christian. But a lot of people do. They get very angry about it. And I think that's why the idea of you're Christian and trans boggles people's minds because they've either have a negative experience or they've just decided they don't like Christians or Christianity because of maybe the religious right and the work that they did, you know, in the 90s, trying to keep us from getting married and adopting kids and serving in the military. And it was a challenging time. I understand where that comes from, but I don't know that it's as big of a problem now.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I see that all the time. They grew up in some type of a faith-based family and, you know, and they see representatives of that faith behave in a certain way and treat them a certain way. And so then they use that as a way to demonize the entire faith in and of itself. It would totally make sense if I just completely abandoned God, abandoned my relationship with Jesus, and no one would have thought ill of me for it, but I held on to it because I've always believed that we are meant to be in community with other believers, and you know, because that's scripturally sound, and it's no fun to be by yourself. But at the same time, your faith is also something that you take personal ownership of. It's your relationship with Jesus is between you and Jesus, not between you and Jesus and Joe Schmo down the block who is interpreting the Bible in a particular way. And for me, it was through my faith that I really did the soul searching that I needed to do to discover that what was happening with my identity and why certain things just didn't make sense. And having to figure out, it's like, why am I this way? It was through faith that I was able to navigate that because I just always had this, for whatever reason, God, this is your plan for my life. This is the way, you know, you created me to walk the world in this way. I don't get it. I don't know why things are the way they are, but I'm going to follow you. And as I was able to finally come into myself as a man, that's when I was able to grow into a deeper faith, because it's like, okay, I'm not hiding who I am anymore. I'm able to be myself completely and authentically, which means I can delve deeper into my relationship with Jesus and into what I truly believe in, and to get further into scripture and understand why certain people may interpret things in a certain way, and to understand that the Bible, I love how my particular church describes it, the Bible is the inspired word of God. It is not the direct word of God, because God didn't write it. Human beings wrote the Bibles, and we believe that God inspired what those human beings wrote. But God himself did not write this Bible, which means it is absolutely open to interpretation. And because of how many languages it's been translated into. And yeah, so the Bible was ultimately written and interpreted by human beings. And most of the time, cultural standards of those times influence those interpretations.
Xander Keg is hosting the Umbrella Hour. We are going to take our first commercial break. Xander's guest this hour is Jake Ward. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Umbrella Hour. We are back from the first commercial break. Xander Keg is hosting the Umbrella Hour, and his guest is Jake Ward. Let's get back to where they left off.
Basically, what I'm getting from you is that you're unapologetic in who you are, and you're also very confident in who you are. And when you're unapologetic and confident, you're just going to walk the world at your own pace, in your own direction, right? And so all of the naysayers and the questioners, it's not going to throw you off your path. I can hear it as you're talking. You have a strong inner resolve, which is the clinician. We talk about an internal locus of control versus an external locus of control. And with you, I can tell you have an internal locus of control because you know that you are in charge of your life. And it makes a big difference. I think that, unfortunately, there are a lot of people, not just in the trans community, but in general, who do have an external locus of control. So they're so focused on other people seeing them, how they see themselves, and getting affirmation from others and validation from others and acceptance from others. And when they don't, they try and force it out of people instead of just going back to themselves and saying, I am who I am and I'm okay with that. and I'm going to walk the world like that. It's, I consider it to be a much easier way to live when you have that external locus of control. It doesn't mean that we're not going to run into people in situations that are challenging, because people who are very externally driven are not necessarily going to be very friendly to people that are internally driven, because we're not going to go along with them. You know, we're going to be talking a little bit about how this might be manifesting in the trans community. You talked about your walk in your path. It's the one God laid out for you. You're not sure why, but you're doing it. In your bio, you know, you mentioned that you started your exploring your gender identity when you were 13 years old. I'll go a little bit further, but I'm curious how you even knew about, maybe you weren't actually using the gender identity, those words at 13, but I'm curious to know. I'll have you talk to us a little bit about how that happened, what happened at age 13 that led you to that. And then you started medical transition at 16. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about what was going on in your world or in your internal experience that led you to at 13 to start exploring gender, and then the process of starting actual medical transition at 16. What does that mean? What did you start at 16? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So at 13, that's when I started working with a therapist. Yeah, because the word transgender wasn't really, if the word did exist, I certainly didn't know about it. I knew because of things like Jerry Springer and the Maury Povich show, there was something called a sex change. And that was something that maybe an adult did at some point. But even just going back to my earliest memories as a child, I remember feeling like a boy and not understanding why I wasn't a boy since that's what I felt like. Because like my family, they just thought I was just a tomboy, you know, just a little girl that wasn't girly. You know, I like to wear more boyish clothes. I like to play with boy toys. And no one necessarily thought anything of it because that was a fairly normal thing. I mean, it was the 90s. I mean, you know, that this was during a time when gender stereotypes and things, those things were starting to kind of fall to the wayside. And people were just like, just do you. There was nothing controversial. There was nothing overly interesting about it. But for me, it felt like it was something deep. Little girls like to play house. There's always a fight over, well, someone has to be the dad. I will be the dad. I will totally be the dad. I'm cool with that. Someone's got to volunteer to be the dad. That's me. I'm on it. And some people, it's like, well, maybe you're just, well, then maybe that was just a sign that you were going to be gay. Well, no, because I can see the dynamic of two women in a relationship and a man and a woman in a relationship. And those are two very different pictures. I'm looking more at the picture of a man and a woman in a relationship and how that interaction works. And then coming into like middle school age, the first girl that I had feelings for became my first girlfriend. It happened to be that a good friend of her family's was a trans man. And I had opened up and was kind of sharing with her that, you know, it's like, I feel like a guy. I know there's this thing called a sex change that some people, and it's like, I think that's what I should, if that's the thing that is going to allow me to live my life as a guy, because I feel like I am a guy and that's what I should be. And she's like, oh yeah. She's like, I know about that. She's like, yeah, as a friend of my mom's, he used to be a woman and that, and yeah, him and his wife were lesbians and then he became a man. And so it's like, yeah, he's like, I've heard of people like that. It's like, yeah, it's like you take hormones and you can have surgery and it's a thing. And I'm like, how do you do that? That's what I need. Let's do it.
Wow. I'm thinking back to when I was 13. I was a juvenile delinquent, so I was kind of in the system for a little while. I was also a tomboy, but I did go into lesbian community because I was 39 when I started my medical transition, and I had my first girlfriend when I was 14. I was in the lesbian community for a number of years. I think it's important for people to be able to separate out that, yes, you and I are trans men, and we were tomboys as kids. But that doesn't mean that every tomboy is a trans man.
Right.
Right? Because I feel like what I hear a lot of parents saying about their young kids are things that our parents would have said about us, which is, oh, they didn't like playing with the girls' toys and wearing the girls' clothes and doing things with the girls. And, well, yes, but there's a lot of women who were tomboys, and not all of them are lesbian even. To be able to separate out what people call gender identity, which I'm not too clear on really, we'll just use it because that's the common day phrasing, but then the gender expression, right? Like how we're expressing our gender. I mean, you could be a girl who has a masculine gender expression, and it neither means that you are going to grow up to be a lesbian or a trans man, right? But I think it's probably fairly difficult to make those kinds of determinations in really young kids. It's mostly in adolescence when that's going to start really showing up as different based on going through puberty and having sexual orientation sort of come online, or sexual attraction or sexual engagement, something like that. So does that make sense?
Yeah. Because like, obviously when I was growing up, you know, seeing a little girl that was just a tomboy, that wasn't unusual. No one thought anything of it. There was no, let's take the kid to the doctor and see what's going on. It's like, no, that it was a normal thing. And some girls, they grew out of it and they eventually became more feminine as puberty happened. Some didn't. Some became very butchy lesbians. Some did not. There was nothing of it, because there is kind of this understanding that your preferences, your personality, your presentation choices, that doesn't necessarily dictate your identity. Those are surface level things that don't necessarily have this big, deeper meaning. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. You know, there's nothing deeper behind it. A girl can just be a girl that likes to play with trucks and, you know, play baseball. A boy maybe just likes to bake and do ballet. That's like, oh, is there something deeper going on? Is this kid trans? Is this kid gay? It's like, no, this kid's just a kid who's exploring what that kid likes.
I do like being able to differentiate those things. And also, culturally speaking, there's going to be different ideas about what's acceptable and unacceptable as gender presentation. I was lucky, right? I was very fortunate that I was allowed to be a tomboy. And I was actually given hand-me-downs from a couple of my male cousins. My aunt would take their clothes because they were a couple years older than me, and give them to me, which I loved. That meant I got to wear OP shorts and Hang 10 t-shirts. So I was really happy as a little kid growing up at the beach in Los Angeles to be able to have, you know, those secondhand surfer clothes. I was a kid in the 70s, and that's when the idea of Free to Be You and Me was just starting to come about. And we were trying to get away from this idea of what's a proper way for a girl to be or a boy to be. It was mostly girls, though. I really feel like the boys didn't get as much liberation as the girls did around what they wore and what kinds of activities they engaged in. Girls could be tomboys without getting teased, but the boys, unfortunately, would still be teased and taunted for doing something that was considered too girly or something only girls do, which is unfortunate, you know?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Because even nowadays, I don't think that, because like if you see a woman in like a masculine suit or whatever, you know, no one really thinks anything of it. But if a guy is walking down the street in a skirt and some high heels, he's going to attract some possibly unwanted attention.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even think that's changed nowadays. You know, it's like women are allowed to cross over the boundaries, whereas men stay very clearly on the defined masculine side of the fence.
Yeah, I think you're right. So then at 16, that's when you started your medical transition. What does that mean? What happened at age 16?
So for me, that was just starting on testosterone injections. So there was a, because back, this was would have been 2009, so not even the 2010s yet. So there wasn't really a whole lot of talk about using like puberty blockers or anything like that. It was, and 15, 16 was the youngest you even saw anyone starting to transition back then. And even that was extremely rare still. So yeah, for me, it was just taking testosterone. I mean, I had already, female puberty had already started, so there wasn't really any puberty to block at that point. It just, okay, start on testosterone and we'll just stop female puberty where it was at and then progress on into male puberty. You know, that's just kind of how it went down for me.
And so at 16, you're in high school, right? Or are you at this point, are you in a traditional high school? You're transitioning in high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just a normal public high school in Southwest Wisconsin. So in a not very big town either.
What was that like? Because people known you since you were even younger? Like, is that where you grew up? So people knew who you were?
I'm originally from the Central Illinois area, about a couple hours south of Chicago. But I had obviously started out in that school, people thinking that I was a girl, or at the very least was a masculine gay girl, that, you know, that's what most people knew. I think there were some people who didn't know me very well thought I was a guy just because of my general appearance didn't necessarily scream female by any means, because I wore very masculine clothing. My hair was cut short. My voice was actually fairly low to begin with. I confused my high school choir director, because when I started in choir and we did the kind of the vocal testing to see what part to sing, he kept getting frustrated. He's, "You're too low. You're too low for a female." He's, "I normally wouldn't put a female on a male singing part, but I have to put you in as a tenor." And I'm like, okay. It's like, "I'm sorry I'm making this difficult for you." But he was just so baffled. He's like, "I'm not used to putting a female on a male part." But he's like, "You're way too low to even be an alto." I'm like, okay. And that was prior to testosterone, just to make sure we get that, just to make that very, that distinct note in there. This was prior to testosterone. I was singing as a tenor. And then, of course, I made him miserable once again, because once testosterone happened, my voice cracked and got even lower. He's like, "Well, I guess now you're a baritone." He's like, "All right."
It makes me think of my wife and I like to go, and even long before I met Margaret, I used to go to gay and lesbian choirs. And I find it interesting because in like all lesbian choirs or all gay male choirs, and even the combined choirs, people are going to be singing different levels. I'm not sure exactly how to say that correctly. They need people for the full range, but it's like, if you have only men in a choir, then you have to have men who sing at the higher and the lower and everything in between. And the same when you have a women's chorus or choir, you're going to have the same thing. So it's interesting to hear that your choir director in school was a little flustered by that, you know, because like in adult choirs, it's probably just something they deal with all the time, you know, with adult women and their voices.
Yeah, well, and I guess it's something he had never encountered that before. He'd never seen a person that he presumed was a female, and he had to put said person on a male singing part. Even my natural voice before hormones were involved, hormones that already existed in my body, obviously, made my voice low enough that I couldn't even sing an alto part. He's like, "You wouldn't be able to hit the upper range of the alto part." He's like, "I can't put you in it. I guess I have to put you in as a tenor." And then my voice cracked and dropped, and which my voice was another reason why I could pass as a boy even prior, because my voice was naturally lower. And I don't know why that is, if it's just something I picked up with because I grew up being around my grandpa a lot and a lot of my uncles. And so I just picked up the way kind of they spoke because I liked being around them and I wanted to be like them. Who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I almost get the sense that, and maybe it's just the way you're telling the story, that there's a part of this, is it chorus director or choir? Chorus?
We called it choir, yeah.
Choir, right. It almost sounds like there was a part of what he was saying that could have been an apology, like, "I'm so sorry I can't put you with with these other groups. I have to put you over here," almost, because I would imagine that some girls might be offended to have to sing a boy part, right? They might not like that, but for you, you were like, "Works for me."
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I wonder if that's what it was too, because, you know, it's like, would I be uncomfortable having to be on one of the male parts, you know, and to where, you know, because like I would be standing with the other tenors, and I would not even be near any of the girls, and I'm like, I don't care.
In those choirs where the boys and the girls or the men and the women wear different clothing, right?
If you had to
wear the clothing of the girls, but you're standing with all the guys, you know?
Yeah, well, and it was interesting because it was actually shortly after that they got us proper, like, dress uniforms for, like, competitions and things and concerts for the band and the choir. And I didn't even have to ask because my band director, because basically the women had like this long skirt and some kind of like this maroon color, like kind of sweater blouse thing. And then the men got tuxedos, and I didn't even necessarily have to ask my band director. He just from just kind of knowing how I walk around in the world. He's like, hey, he's like, I'm assuming you would prefer to have the tuxedo for your concert uniform, correct? I'm like, yes, I'm glad I didn't have to ask. He's like, yeah, he's like, I kind of figured that's what you would be more comfortable in. And it's like, yeah, it's like, that's fine. You know, you're still in uniform. You're just wearing the uniform you are more comfortable wearing. And he's like, that's
that.
He's like, that's fine. He's like, now, if you were asking to wear like a t-shirt and sweatpants, that would be a little, you know, with that, that'd be a little different. But he's like, no, you're just asking to wear the other version of the uniform.
That's great. What a great story. Oh my gosh.
You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Kegg. We are taking our second commercial break. Xander's guest is Jake Ward. Jake is a trans man. He was born and raised in the Midwest. Jake started exploring his gender identity at age 13, then medically transitioned at age 16. He was evaluated by multiple healthcare providers for a period of multiple years before being able to proceed with medical transition. He has completed top and bottom surgery. Additionally, Jake was raised in a non-denominational Christian family and is still very connected to his faith. Let's take our second commercial break. We'll be back shortly.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk. UK.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Kegg. And his guest this hour is Jake Ward. Let's get back to where they left off.
And then obviously when the transition happened and everything, and it's like, oh, okay, you know, you presented very masculine and we pretty much kind of treated you like a guy anyway. So now you're just saying, well, that you actually are a guy and that you're going through this process to look more like a guy. For the most part, people were okay. I mean, there were some kids that were kind of weirded out by it and they just stayed away from me. Part of that may have also been that I was on the wrestling teams. That might have been a factor as well. It's like, yeah, it's like we probably shouldn't pick on the weird kid because the weird kid can wrestle. So, you know, that may have been a deterrent as well. But I think some people, they just kind of kept their distance. They were a little weirded out. And I'm like, I don't have time to care. I've got other things I'm trying to deal with. My body's doing all kinds of weird and strange and kind of cool things with the hormones. And I'm just trying to get through high school. And I'm like, I do not have time to deal with people giving me crap. So I just didn't deal with it. I just didn't care. I didn't have time. I didn't have time to care. I didn't want to care.
Absolutely. I only did a couple of years of high school, like public high school. I was also very masculine and I had a girlfriend in high school and I didn't get bullied or teased when I was in high school, but I was a big kid. And so I just, I had a rough kind of way about me, and people probably figured that it wouldn't end well for them if they gave me any guff, because I just didn't take it. You know, when I was younger, I used to beat up bullies. The kids who got bullied would come to me and tell me, "I'm being bullied, I'm being picked on by this other kid." And so I'd go pick on the bully. So I sort of had a reputation, because I was in high school with kids that I knew from elementary and middle school. They kind of knew to stay away from me because I wasn't going to just let them get away with being bullies. So I was protected in that way, which I really appreciate, that because I was a juvenile delinquent with a mean streak, you know, as a protective layer that saved me from having to deal with a lot of that bullying that a lot of kids go through. In your bio, you mentioned about you've now had top surgery and bottom surgery. What age were you when you had your top surgery? So you had starter hormones at 16.
Yeah, and so then top surgery was at 19.
19. So some people might ask, what was the reason for the three-year gap there? Nowadays, don't you feel like people are just in a rush to like get everything done?
Oh yeah. It's, it's one of those, it's like, well, back then you have to remember there were very, very few insurance policies that were paying for anything. So because we're in like the early 2010s. So insurance was not really a thing. There were maybe a couple of policies here and there that covered it. So that was a big deterrent. Also, there were no doctors performing surgery on a minor. That was another thing too. And yeah, and it's just the way policies were back then, you had to go slower. It was required to go slower. Because even when I did, when I was at 19, when I was able to get my top surgery, because my grandmother, who I love dearly, came into some financial abundance, and she was willing to pay for the surgery. But even with that, even with paying out of pocket, the surgeon still required me to get a letter from a therapist just confirming that, you know, I was ready for this step, that I understood. So it's like, just again, you know, dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, making sure that this is what you need to be doing. It's like, you're confident in who you are, you're confident in the process that you need to go through to live as your authentic self, and this is just this is the next step. There is these kind of layers of protection, I would call it, just to make sure that we're not sending people down a path they shouldn't be going down.
I know that the word that people use to describe what you just walked us through, they call it gatekeeping. I consider it safeguarding. I think Buck calls it safekeeping, or at least within social work, you know, there is an attentiveness to making sure that minors in particular are protected and that they're safe, especially around medical things. And so I think that some of the pushback towards what people consider gatekeeping, I think that that's actually causing some of the backlash that we're experiencing now. I think we got pretty far in all the things that we had access to, especially when the Affordable Care Act came in and there were no more exclusions for trans, you know, this was nationwide. I was in California when I got my surgeries, and insurance covered it back in, you know, 2008, bottom surgery for me and top surgery before that. So it depended on where you were in the States. But this idea of, we had basically everything we had said we wanted and needed. And then all of a sudden, I'm not exactly sure what happened, but I think it's probably because of the issue with minors. I think that's where it's pushing people's buttons, because I think people were completely happy or were willing to just ignore the fact that adults were doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
But I think once it got into kids, that brought out a lot of people who are truly concerned about children, and people who want to use other people's concern about children to champion their causes. And then people who also are concerned about children, but think that they should have access to what they call gender-affirming care for minors. And then people who want to be able to, who say that at any age, you should be able to just declare you're trans and get access to all the care you need without any sort of minimum standard, like a social worker, for example, doing a biopsychosocial assessment to find out about the structure of the family and the support within the family and the life of the child and how well they're doing in all different areas of their life. Like, that's an important information to gather, because there are a lot of people who don't really think about, a child can't be med compliant. A child is going to require an adult to be attentive to their medication needs. right? We can't expect children to be paying attention to, like, oh, my alarm just went off. It's time for my injection. We need to know that the families are on board. And my concern is that there are families where the parents are not on board. And so people are trying to find a way to remove that child from their family in order to get them the access to the care versus trying to find a way to work with the family to support the kid to maybe get access to psychosocial support, psychotherapy, if that's sure. what they need, until they get to be a little bit older. I think in England now, there's no more puberty blockers for minors unless it's under certain circumstances and they get enrolled in a study. But right. hormones, I think, is 16 years old. So that's the demarcation they've made there. And that's after going through a whole systematic review and they made a determination, yeah, 16, 17, that's okay, right? That's an okay age to start hormones.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I had to go through. I mean, I was evaluated by a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. I was given different tests and different things just to make sure that there wasn't something else going on that was causing dysphoria-like symptoms to surface. They wanted to make sure that this was what I really needed to do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting that layer of certainty in place, especially when you are talking about a minor, and especially with nowadays where there's kids and teenagers, their access to information is infinitely more abundant than even when I was first starting out. I had to understand the feelings I was having and then go find the information of what to do with it. These kids are being given it as an option from day one. How I see it is they're trying to rush into transition in order to find themselves, when really it is you need to find yourself and then figure out, okay, now I need to transition because I have found myself. And this is what I need to do to be true to who I am, because I figured out who I am. You shouldn't be transitioning to find yourself. You should have already found yourself first before you even start to transition.
I really like that distinction. I know for myself, even though I was older, I started calling myself trans in 2000. Mm-hmm. And then I started hormones in 2005. And now, of course, in 2000, yes, there was an internet, but it wasn't as robust as it is now. But for me, I worked in the GLBT Student Services Office at my college in Denver, Colorado. And so we had books about trans people. We invited trans people to come speak on the college campus. So I was aware of trans people. I was introduced to them. I had actually grown up, or my mother was a producer of shows, and some of her shows were drag shows. And so I actually grew up, I didn't grow up with my mother, but when I was hanging out with my mom, she almost always had drag queens around her, right? Sure. And gay men, because that's who drag queens were back then. And so, so I knew all about that, but I didn't know that there were trans men until I was in my maybe late 20s. And I had a friend who transitioned. Well, I should say an acquaintance more than who transitioned. But they went away and transitioned and then came back. And I was like, who's that? Like, I didn't really recognize them because they looked so differently after 4 years of being gone. It was a few years later when I remembered, oh, yeah, I remember Christopher. Christopher transitioned. And remembering, oh, yeah, I knew him before then. And then I knew him afterwards. And putting that all together. And then I saw a documentary called You Don't Know Dick. And that was the first feature-length film that was focused on trans men. And it had people in it like Jameson Green and Max Valerio, right? So people who were pioneers. There's people before them, but pioneers for me in my journey, because they had books that came out, Becoming a Visible Man by Jameson Green and The Testosterone Files by Max Valerio. And I read those books and I was starting to get a better understanding of like the actual experience of trans men. And just prior to that, I had looked at a picture book called Body Alchemy by a trans man who's since passed, Lauren Cameron. And he took photographs. And so at the time I was living in Colorado and then Florida, but when I moved out to California, I was in Berkeley. I actually got to meet all those people. I used to see Lauren Cameron walking on my seminary campus with his little dog. Jameson Green, I saw all the time. I asked him if he'd be my mentor, and he's been my mentor for almost 19 years now. Max, I saw at Wednesday night discussion groups in San Francisco on a pretty regular basis, and we're still in touch today. He's back in Colorado now. It's one of those things where I wasn't being told anything. I was also discovering who I was and then finding the resources, finding the people. I never really thought about it that way, but I like that distinction that you made very much.
Yeah, because I feel like that's what I'm seeing a lot with these kids and like, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-olds they're trying to find themselves, and because they are being presented with transness as an option, which transness is not an option. You're either are or you aren't. It's not something you can just decide to be. But to them, it's being presented as like a way to find yourself, because, you know, they see success stories of like, oh, look how much happier this person is now that they were able to transition. What kid who's is going through an awkward period in their life, like all kids do, how is that not going to be appealing to them?
Yeah, I think this idea of I don't want to go through puberty.
That too. It's like, yeah, puberty sucks. All of us who have gone through puberty, especially those of us who have gone through puberty more than once, we can very much attest that puberty sucks. But unfortunately, you can't just skip over it, because now that we're seeing what's happening with the kids that did get on the puberty blockers at like 10, 11 years old, and seeing some of the health problems that they are now experiencing because their body was not allowed to fully develop, and there's going to be a catch. And unfortunately, we're starting to see it because there are more examples of kids that did transition very, very young and never went through an initial puberty and just went straight to essentially an artificially created puberty through hormone therapy.
Jake, it's been wonderful having you on the show today. Why don't you tell us where people can find you on social media and if you have anything coming up that you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. My main source is Instagram. It's Jake, J-A-K-E-W 1023. That's my handle on Instagram. From there, you can find a link to my personal YouTube channel where I try to post with some regularity. I maintain a pretty busy schedule, but I post as much as I can. For those of you that may be a listener of Buck Angel and his content, his producer Seth and I are actually in the process of putting together a podcast of our own. It's called Transpotting, and we're going to discuss just various topics that pertaining to trans and some of the things that, and just kind of giving our own viewpoint on things and some of the interesting things that has happened to the trans community. So keep an eye out for Transpotting, and yeah, that's kind of what's going on for me right now.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely going to have to subscribe to that and take a listen. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
We have reached the end of the Umbrella Hour. You were listening to Xander Kegg, licensed clinical social worker, and his guest, Jake Ward, a trans man who lives in Chicago. Thank you for listening to the Umbrella Hour.